If you think trains will stop if they see a car on the tracks, you're right, they will. About a mile after they hit you. In 2015 alone, 230 people were killed at railroad crossings. Don't become the next fatality. Stop. Trains can't. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. One.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where the Lakers saw what was going on in OKC and said, all right, we'll take your Westbrook re-signing for 3 years, $85 million, and raise you one Marcelino Huertas re-signing for $3 million. Booyah, indeed. Isn't that right, Alan?
Damn right.
Lakers always find a way to one-up their competition when somebody else is trying to steal their thunder. Ooh, I came up with that off the top of the dome. It's not even on my notes. Shoot. All right. Well, I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by one of my co-hosts in our triumvirate of me, Tommy, and Alan Riley. Alan, how's it going?
Hello.
And did you listen to the spectacular last podcast episode Tommy and I did with at Laker Film Room guy, Pete Zayas, a.k.a. also Golden Throat on Lakers Ground? Apparently, he's world famous on the Lakers Ground Forum site. He's like Kaiser Soze from The Usual Suspects, essentially. But were you able to catch any of it?
Yes, I was. It was super informative, really enlightening. Yeah, you guys should definitely check out his YouTube videos. For sure, he does incredible breakdowns. It isn't just like the general stuff that you hear all over the place. It's incredibly in-depth. This guy's a really smart dude.
Yeah, for sure. So definitely check out his YouTube videos and also check out our last episode with our interview with at Laker Film Room, Peter Zayas. Today we're going to be running it back and doing another redraft episode because we had so much fun doing the 2014 one. We're going to be doing a redraft of the 2015 rookie class, which will essentially also serve as a 2015 rookie ranking. Before we get to that, though, I know we gained some new followers recently by virtue of, like, just the exposure that our last episode with Peter got us. So to everyone listening that's new, welcome, and don't expect what you heard last episode in terms of quality to be the norm, as you've probably already realized with the start of this podcast. But what you can expect is to have some fun with us as we talk some Lakers. And for all those new followers, if you haven't already followed us on Twitter, please do so now, at Lakers Legacy Pod. If you're listening to this podcast, and you have been for a while, and you don't follow us on Twitter, you guys are doing it all wrong, man.
Yeah, what the hell are you doing?
Come on, JC, tell them what's up.
Hey, man, you gotta get on the Twitter, man, because, you know, that thing is lit. It's like every single day there's so much going on, so much information, you're really gonna learn a lot. So, yeah, you know, that's what you gotta do.
Hey, you heard it here first from JC. And also, outside of Twitter, please also rate and review us on iTunes, because the more you rate and review us, that's how many Papa Dang hosted board game nights our young core will be having this season to once again build up their chemistry and their Jenga blocks. Or bartering skills, because that's what you have to have when you're playing Settlers of Catan. Or any one of your number of favorite personal board games that you want to, you know, have these guys play. But it all starts with you rating and reviewing so we can get to that point. But Alan, the real question here, though, is if you had to pick one Lakers player out of the young core and pick a board game for them to play, just as like a personality match or even a board game that you think what he would be best at, I guess, what pairing would you come up with?
So I was thinking, this is not the young core whatsoever. Sure. I would play chess with Luol Deng.
Chess with Luol Deng.
I would absolutely play chess with
him. What's the rationale behind it?
Because I could imagine him in the park just playing chess with random strangers for hours on end, having incredibly meaningful conversations and becoming like life coaches for complete strangers over chess.
Yeah, I could see him wearing like one of those like berets or what? Is it a beret?
Like a tam.
Yeah, like a tam.
Yeah,
hat,
and like a polo shirt or a cardigan or something
beige
like that.
Pants.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I could see Luol Deng definitely playing chess for sure. That's
sorry, I totally broke the rules of the game, but popped into my mind, so I want to go with it.
That's perfect. For me, I'm gonna go with Zubats and Hungry Hippos. I don't even need to explain it. So you just have that visual in your head, Zubats and Hungry Hippos. You can imagine him just having like a ball of a time and like giggling and like pushing people out of the way and be like, no, give me those, you know? So There you go. So once again, please go on iTunes, rate us 5 stars, because the more you rate and review us, that's how many board games all these guys will play and have fun with. And you know that's what you want them to do, because it'll only improve their on-court chemistry. No, but to be serious, you know, I know I make these dumb jokes about rating and reviews every week, but it really does help our exposure and ranking a lot if you guys rate and review. Yeah, please take that seriously, even though it seems like I don't. But it really is our best way of letting us know that you guys appreciate the show, that you guys are listening, that you enjoy what you hear week to week. And for those who've already done so and followed us on Twitter, retweeted our episode posts, rated and reviewed us, and given us 5 stars on iTunes, like, thank you very much. You know, the response has been incredible over just this past year. And shout out to Kim Kian. I don't know how to say her last name, but it's Kim. Her name's Kim. At Kimby Kian, KimbyKyan on Twitter. And she's the very first person to ever rate and review our podcast since when we first started back in October 2015. So she's more hipster than all you guys, because she somehow found promise in our danky podcast show way back when we first started, and our content and the flow of our content wasn't even that great. Which is hard to believe because it's not great right now. But you know what I'm saying? So shout out to Kim. And, you know, hopefully we'll even shout out some of your guys' rating and reviews. If you want to leave a dissertation, you know, I'll read it out. You know, I even have one right now. Let's shout out. Wee-woo-wow-woo-cuss-jesu-cussy. This is probably the wrong guy to shout out, but he knows who I'm talking about. He says, 5 stars because they said if I give the podcast 5 stars, Timofey Mozgov will give more piggybacks. So that's what I'm talking about, guys. This guy actually applied what I joked about on the podcast one night. But we pretty much said if the more you rate and review, that's how many more piggybacks Timofey Mozgov will give Ivica Zubats this upcoming season. This guy applied that, put it in his review, gave us 5 stars, and we're all feeling good about it. So yeah, once again, if you can rate and review us on iTunes, that would be great. All right, with all that joking around and all that said, let's get it to the meat of our show, which is, once again, the 2015 NBA rookie class redraft. D'Angelo Russell, baby. Let's go.
I realized that when I was born, my arm would tingle. It would just tingle all the time. And I asked my mom what it was, so I got an x-ray and it was just ice there. But I don't know.
All right, so 2015 NBA redraft. This class, more so than the 2014 class, I feel like, had the much deeper class, had a lot more talent. The 2014 class was overhyped, in my opinion. There are some really good pieces in that class, but if you remember the way that people were talking about the 2014 class, they were saying it was like the 2003 LeBron, Wade, Bosh class, or even the 96 Kobe, Iverson, Ray Allen class, which is ridiculous. 2015, I feel like, could have made a better case for that, you know, because there's so many solid players, so much depth, and more so, some elite talent at the very top. And we'll get right into that. Preface first, you know, first I want to preface that we're going to add Nikola Jokic into this class because he was essentially a rookie this past season. And so I guess essentially it's a ranking of the 2015 NBA rookies. But we know that Nikola Jokic was drafted in the 2014 class, number 41st overall. So he's obviously going to crack our top 10 here somehow. So yeah, we're going to do the top 10, and we'll also tell you guys whether we think Larry Nance cracked it, or Anthony Brown, who knows. All right, so with that said, Alan.
How dare you chuckle at Anthony Brown, right, he's fine. A good guy.
All right, me might be in there. So Alan, who is your number one pick if you had to redraft this 2015 NBA rookie class today?
Cat. Karl Anthony Towns, no doubt about it. This guy is a freaking stud. I mean, there's so many positive things we can say about him, but just to highlight, you know, a few of them, he's ridiculously athletic. I remember watching him in Kentucky and thinking that he moved well, but for some reason, it looked like his gait was a little bit off as he got up and down the floor. But, you know, maybe some of that was just the way their offense flowed. They weren't like a run and gun team, so maybe he was more or less jogging back and forth you know, on offense. But clearly with the Timberwolves, that guy is, he's just absolutely insane. He has awesome post moves, he's got a jump hook, incredibly advanced footwork, which you didn't see as much in college because he played limited minutes since Kentucky is such a deep team. One thing that I really like when I watch him offensively is that he doesn't make up his mind before he makes his moves, you know? So he has secondary moves, and even then he'll, you know, switch into, like, a third different move. Just shows how versatile he is. And then defensively, his shot blocking seemed like he might just be a weak side shot blocker from college, but actually when he's playing his man-to-man defense, he sticks to his guy so well, and they may not be the most glamorous shot blocks, but they're incredibly effective. They're not going to be on highlight reels. He's not swatting it out of bounds or anything, but he's very, very good defensively, and his passing is another thing that is actually really flashy. He may not be, like, the flashiest personality, because we always joke around that he seems like a guy who will work at Disneyland or something like that. He's a little, like, corny, kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
But I feel like he plays with a lot of attitude and a lot of confidence, a lot of swagger in his game. So, I mean, this year, you know, he averaged 18.3 points per game, 10.5 rebounds, almost three of which were offensive rebounds, nearly two blocks a game, two assists. So he's just an absolute beast. No doubt he's number one. And shout out to basketballreference.com for all of these stats and advanced
stats. We're doing
stats.
What they told us to do
it
on the site.
It says on the top of the website, shout us out, give us credit so we can keep this website going. So I hope that helps, guys.
There you go. We're
doing girls.
Yeah, we're doing our part for sure. And obviously this comes as no surprise probably anybody, but Karl Anthony Towns, Kit Kat, Katniss Everdeen, System of a Towns is my number one pick. You know, those are some all of my fantasy basketball names last year, if anybody wanted to know. And for right reason, because Karl Anthony Towns is the legit superstar in this class, who you could say, if there's one person who you could peg a Hall of Fame tag to, who would it be? It would be Karl Towns, you know. And I saw this coming from Kentucky when he burst onto the scene and people were talking about him or Okafor. I just saw the versatility. You know, in Kentucky, he was relegated to just playing in the post a lot more, so you didn't get to see his jump shot. You didn't get to see his three-point shot. You didn't get to see his full repertoire of passing, being able to move on the perimeter. But we saw that in full effect in the NBA. You know, you said it. How do you average as a rookie 18 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.7 blocks on 54% shooting? Like, that's amazing. And the fact that he shoots jump shots already and is shooting threes and he's able to hit 54%, and he also shot 34% from threes, you know, granted he only hit half a three, but for a big guy, for a center, that's amazing. So Karl Anthony Towns is literally, like, for me, just such a unique talent, the likes of which we haven't seen since maybe Anthony Davis. And I personally think he's better than Anthony Davis, because Anthony Davis can't pass like Karl Anthony Towns, and Karl Anthony Towns moves a lot more fluider than Anthony Davis, who Anthony Davis moves like how you'd expect someone that long to move. Sort of like clunky, but he's super still athletic. Karl Anthony Towns, there have been clips, if you look it up on YouTube or seen Vines, where he looks like Kevin Durant. And you're like, wait, how can a guy who's 6'10", like, move like that? You've only seen Kevin Durant do that, where he's out on the perimeter and he's like jab stepping, jab faking, and all of a sudden he'll blow by his man and then go into a reverse layup.
And you figure that Durant would be that agile because he is a lot lighter, but Towns is, I don't even know, like 250, 265.
Yeah, he's a lot more heavy.
Big guy,
he's built,
man,
to play the center power forward position, yeah, and he does it well, but there are times when he looks just as agile as a wing player out on the perimeter, which is incredible to see. And out of all the rookies this year, Karl Towns has the highest win shares totals at 8.3, which is huge, which means he pretty much essentially, whenever he was on the court, was helping his team in a very positive way, offensively, defensively, you name it. His per 36 numbers are even more ridiculous, you know, 20.6 points, 11.7 rebounds, you know, two blocks, almost a steal. So Karl Anthony Towns in every superlative way, like, amazing. We were that close to getting him and having, like, our center of the future, but that's totally fine. Yeah, Karl Anthony Towns, you mentioned it earlier, but he reminds me of, like, Taj Mowry from The Smart Guy or something, you know what I mean? Just has that personality, super smart, very personable, also kind of cheesy, but he has definitely has the right head on his shoulders, pretty much, and he has the right mentor in KG, and that's who he kind of reminds me of. If KG had been brought up in this era and learned how to shoot threes from a very early age and was told to be more perimeter-oriented, it's kind of Karl Towns, because KG could pass, KG could handle the ball, he could shoot jump shots. If he just extended that range out, who knows, man. So Karl Anthony Towns has that sort of very versatile play. He can do everything, pretty much, offensively, defensively. There's not one thing that you could say he does poorly at all. So Yep, call town. So let's move on to our number two pick, Alan. Who are you picking number two?
All right, it's going to sound like a little bit of homerism here, but I'm going to go with D'Lo.
Hey, I'll get out in front of this as well and say I'm keeping D'Angelo Russell at the number two spot.
Sweet.
I will say, though, that it was very close call between him and Devin Booker. I mean, spoiler alert, that is a very tough call for me. But let's go with why you decided to keep D'Angelo number two.
Yeah, number one thing that sticks out to me is his clutch factor. I get it. Last year was a lost season. Summer league doesn't really count for anything, but this guy has so much confidence. And you got to remember that game against Minnesota when Kobe decided not to come back in the game, let the young guys handle it. D'Angelo had a pretty ugly looking bank shot in the paint from about 8 feet, but who cares? It went in. He was down to take the shot.
Against Wiggins.
Yeah, exactly. The Brooklyn game where he scored 39, I was actually at that game.
Nice.
The ice in my veins, we all know that. There's a game at Sacramento where he had a few clutch shots actually within the last 3 minutes, but then he went out with a sprained ankle. But I have a lot of confidence that he actually would have won that game for us. And then, of course, most recently against Philadelphia in Summer League, had no problem taking that three-pointer and just pulling up. So you can't ignore that. That's an intangible for sure. But that mentality, everyone's eyes are on me, and I don't really care if I miss this. I got to take it. I think I'm the best guy, best option for it on the team. Got to take that into account. He's very savvy. We all know this. We've seen him all season long. He's very crafty with the ball. Greg Popovich actually talked about that over the summer for USA Select Team. Says he's a lot smarter than people give him credit for. And there are a lot of other vets like Carmelo Anthony and Kevin Durant that are all saying the exact same things. He's a very intelligent player, and he knows how to utilize his strengths to deceive people. Mm-hmm. Big improvements to his post game. I think we can all see similarities, in Kobe's influence for sure. He's really improved with his back to the basket. I remember last year, it might have been 25 games into the season or something like that, where he posted up and it was like, oh shoot, I never seen this before. He looked really fluid, made his first basket. We're all super excited. I think the next game he posted up again, but it was a different move. It's okay, well, this guy's actually incorporating new vocabulary in real game situations. So clearly not afraid to make mistakes, and it just shows off the court. He's definitely putting in the time. Clearly he can isolate. it was funny, based on the last podcast, we were talking about how the one good thing about having Byron as our coach was all of our players have learned how to create their own shot to a degree.
Exactly, and that's
since
exactly.
There was no offensive system to speak of, these guys got to learn how to create for themselves. So you want to take something away from the last couple of years, that is actually a very important thing.
And that's exactly what Peter Zayas brought up in our last podcast at Laker Film Room, that, that's what D'Angelo proved. Like, he gained confidence as the year went on and realized, hey, I can play against these NBA players. I can get my shot against them. It's just a matter of having that confidence, and he was able to show it. So
yeah, he had no choice last year.
For sure.
Could take over a game, obviously. I feel like he's the type of guy where you need a shot, nothing's coming. He's willing to put the team on his back, without a doubt. I feel like he seems like he matured to a degree over the summer. He has been a lot more vocal, seems like, communicating with all the guys, even on defense. And obviously his passing ability, we haven't even seen, I would say, 30% of what he's capable of doing. So super high potential, high ceiling still, which is why I would have him slotted at number two.
Yeah, for me, I have him number two as well, just because of the improvement we saw once he finally did get minutes. And, overall, it was a matter of him just getting minutes. Byron Scott and others would have you think otherwise by saying, he was playing poorly, But every time he got minutes, even early on, he somehow produced a little bit. But, his per-game averages may seem kind of paltry to start with, but 13 points, 3 rebounds, 3.3 assists, 1.2 steals, in only 28 minutes. He only shot 41%, but, as a rookie, that's very common, especially for a guard. But he already shot 35% from three-point range, which is rare for a rookie, And he hit 1.6 threes, which is great, which kind of shows that his three-point shot from college definitely translated to the NBA. That's definitely going to be one of his most lethal weapons here in the NBA. And yeah, if you could, if he can become a perennial 38% three-point shooter, that would be amazing. Pretty much only Steph Curry is the only rookie who comes in and, you know, shoots 40% for three-point land. So to already be shooting 35% in your rookie year is very impressive. And per 36-wise, D'Angelo averaged 16.8 points, 4.4 rebounds, 4.2 assists, 1.5 steals as a 19-year-old. And I think there's this stat, right, where it's like only him and LeBron James and some other random people who are really good who at 19 years old was able to average 16-4-4 at least, which is great company to be a part of. So D'Angelo clearly, even in spite of the fact that he was tossed around by Byron Scott here and there, was put on the bench, didn't get minutes some nights, got minutes some other nights, and relegated to being an ISO player, still was able to have a really, really positive rookie season and turn it around there in the second half. Unfortunately, that Snapchat stuff, you know, got in the way as well, but, you know, he was able to fight through that adversity. And, you know, there was that one stretch where he, including the Brooklyn game where he scored 39 points, that 6 out of 7 games he scored 20 points pretty much. And so D'Angelo Russell is just a very unique player because he's not your typical point guard. He is a combo guard. He's a 6'5 dude who is tall, lanky. And I think one of the positives for him coming into this year was people really killed him for his defense. They didn't think he was going to be able to be any sort of a defender, and I expected the worst. I expected like Steve Nash stuff, you know, like people would just be able to waltz by him. And I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised that when he was motivated and was focused, his length bothered people as we thought it would, because he's lanky, you know, his arms are going to get into passing lanes and he's going to be able to pick people's pockets and get steals, you know, and that's what we saw. He averaged 1.2 steals, but more so than that, during the times when he was engaged, he was actually able to stay in front of his man a couple times. Did he have terrible times where he played porous defense? Yes, that's going to be normal for a rookie. But he also wasn't as bad as people made him out to be, which is a positive in my eyes, as just his first year only. You know, and I referenced, you know, that it was really close for me between picking Devin Booker or D'Angelo Russell. And the reason why I eventually bumped D'Angelo Russell ahead of Booker is because the playmaking vision, you know. Booker was actually able to play a little bit of point guard and showed that he does have playmaking vision, but D'Angelo just has another level to that. He has stellar just playmaking skills, vision. His vision is unreal. You know, he does those crazy backspin bounce passes that look like, you know, bowling ball shots, or as we've called them, like the wanted curve the bullet, you know. He just has innate skills and vision that you can't teach, pretty much, that you kind of just have to already have. It's all about putting it together for him and being able to read his teammates, build that chemistry with them, and, you know, just continue to gain those leadership skills that he's going to need in this next level and continue to mature as a person. So those are all the reasons why I think D'Angelo deserves his spot at number two, pretty much, because the upside is still there. In today's NBA, he's like the perfect guard you want, right? He can shoot the mid-range game. He can play pick and roll and hit you with a bounce pass. He can hit the three-point shot at what seems like a very elite level if he continues this progression. He's got a post-up game, which most, you know, point guards don't have. So for me, D'Angelo Russell, if I could give a comp for him, I actually, you know, people always throw at Curry or Harden. I think he has some Harden in him, but I think it's like a Manu Ginobili plus Harden. You know, if you watch
Manu... He even said that Manu is one of his favorite players,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so. Because both of them have this very herky-jerky, crafty, like, movement to them in terms of their passing ability, the way that they like to score when they drive in the paint, and even the way that they post up. So I would go with a fusion of Harden and Manu Ginobili for D'Angelo Russell. And if he can hit those peaks, that will be well worth the number two pick.
Yep.
All right, so let's move on to number three. Alan, who would you draft number three?
All right, here we go.
Here we go.
Nikola Jokic,
Nikola
baby.
Nikola Jokic. All right, so why did you have Nikola Jokic number three here?
In my notes, I have it in all caps and, like, size 16 font, vision and freaking passing. Holy crap. This guy is incredible. And, you know, I will admit, I didn't watch a whole lot of Denver Nuggets basketball, but when I was doing my research on him, seriously, his vision is, like, Ben Simmons, Lamar Odom, LeBron Flash-esque. Like, and I swear, that's not an exaggeration.
As a seven-footer, yeah.
Yeah.
And to be clear, Nikola Jokic last year finished third in Rookie of the Year voting, so if anybody has no idea who Nikola Jokic is, like...
You gotta look him up. Yeah. You have to look him up. So yeah, his passing skills are absolutely insane. Clearly a very selfless player. Oftentimes, he'll have the ball in the post, and he'll just make that extra pass... and he's very patient when he does it, and I feel like he just has a really good sense of the game in terms of his basketball IQ as to where the defense is going to shift so he can pick his spots. offensively, when it comes to just his shooting, it actually reminds me a lot of Dirk. Mm-hmm. He has like very high release point. It's like textbook. It looks great. He has really good body control when he's playing with his back to the basket. The way he can fade away, create space from defenders, is really, really good. In terms of his stats, let's take a look at his per 36.
So last year he actually only averaged 21 minutes because half the season they weren't sure who they were going to start at the center spot. Eventually he overtook that spot, but overall he only averaged 20 minutes, but somehow he still was able to put up 10.7 rebounds, 2.4 assists, one steal, almost half a block a game. Per 36, that translates to 16.5 points, 11.6 rebounds, almost 4 assists, 1.6 steals, 1 block. So that's pretty incredible as a rookie. And you can see why he finished third in Rookie of the Year voting. He's actually second in win shares out of all the rookies to Karl-Anthony Towns. And he, I believe, had like 6 as his score for win share totals. So, yeah, Nikola Jokic was a very effective player. Any other reasoning why you...
Yeah, offensively, once again, his footwork is impeccable. It's like, coming out of college, I thought Jahlil Okafor had amazing footwork, and his is very good, too. But Nikola Jokic just has so much variety to what he does. You can tell that he's studied a lot, and he's probably pulled from a lot of incredible post players, which is what you want a guy to do, is become, you know, a historian of the game and watch as many Hall of Famers as possible and just steal from them. Yeah. So you could see, and again, it sounds crazy for a lot of people who don't know a whole lot about him, you could see some Tim Duncan, you could see some Hakeem Olajuwon reverse pivots, and a lot of like head fakes and ball fakes that he probably got from Kevin McHale and, you know, who knows who else. So I will admit, prior to doing any research, just from what I remember, I was saying, oh, he'll be top 10 for sure, but maybe like 5th or 6th or something like that. But I couldn't help but bump him up to 3rd.
Cool. All right. For me, number 3, I'm going with Mr. Devin Booker, who pretty much had an outstanding season once Eric Bledsoe from the Suns went down and they shifted him to the shooting guard spot. And if you remember, in Kentucky, it's almost the same case as Karl-Anthony Towns. We were like, oh yeah, he might be good, but what can this guy do besides shoot? This guy is just like, who, J.J. Redick or something. You know what I mean? We have no idea if he can do anything else but shoot. It doesn't seem like he would be a good defender on this next level, but, whew, that boy proved us wrong, man. This guy, you want to talk about Ray Allen?
Yep.
Devin Booker, baby. This is who Ray Allen is who he could be. Or if you want a more baseline comp, maybe a Bradley Beal who doesn't get injured, pretty much. You know, because Devin Booker proved this year that not only can he shoot, but because he was forced to play point guard at times, he had to learn how to play make. Or maybe he already had this within him, he just wasn't able to showcase it in Kentucky, right? But he showed that he was a very capable playmaker who could play off the pick and roll, make the right reads, make the right passes. And on top of that, you know, he was able to show off a much more versatile game than he was able to in Kentucky in terms of being able to hit mid-range jump shots, drive into the lane. I didn't know he was as athletic as he was. So, I mean, his length is crazy. I think he grew an extra inch this summer, which is crazy. So, you know, he's like 6'7 now. So he's a legit, like, tall shooting guard, yeah. You know. He just has everything you'd want in a shooting guard. You know, his percentage would actually betray him because it says he only shot 34% from 3. But, you know, don't let that fool you. He's a knockdown three-point shooter for sure, you know. And I guess as a rookie, like I said, you know, D'Angelo Russell hitting 35 is a really good percentage for a rookie. You could say the same for Devin Booker. 34% isn't bad at all. He averaged overall 14 points, 2.5 rebounds, 2.6 assists. Per 36, that averages out to 18 points, 3 and 3. So he had a very impressive rookie year, pretty much, and he has all the shapings of becoming a very elite type of shooting guard if he continues to shore up his defense and continues to shore up his playmaking, because along with those two assists, he also had like almost two turnovers. So it's clear that he's still working the kinks out on that end. So Devin Booker, man, he is, oh man,
he's a stud.
He's a stud, dude. Him and D'Angelo are best friends, along
Thank
with
goodness.
Seriously, along with him and Karl Towns, that
Come on,
trio.
Baby. A few more years.
People keep calling them the new banana boat. You know, like Chris Paul and Dwayne Wade and LeBron James. You know, so we can only hope, man. If those guys could team up in the future, it's going to be insane. So yeah, that's what why I have Devin Booker number 3.
Nice. I have a number 4.
Oh, there you go.
So just, you know, to reiterate all those things, if you actually look at his field goal percentage by distance. Again, you think of him as just a three-point shooter, and the majority of his shot attempts did come from three. About a third of his shots were attempted from there. But from 0 to 3 feet, he shot 64.1%. And again, that means that when he gets down low, he can finish. I think D'Angelo was like in the mid-50s, which is pretty good too.
Yeah.
But again, with Booker, that shows that he's strong and he can get down low with the big boys. From there, 3 to 10 feet, 41%, and then it goes 37% a little further out, and then under 16 to the three-point line was about 37%. It's all good percentages, and the better the Phoenix Suns become, you know, he's going to get better looks, and those percentages are definitely going to go up. So as a rookie, to be shooting well above 35% pretty much, that's great. But yeah, like you said, I have in my notes as well, he's a la Ray Allen. The way he moves without the ball, comes off screens, is something that you just didn't see in college because he was a kid. He's like 17, 18 years old. He's so damn young. It's going to be pretty scary how good this guy gets. I would definitely see the Bradley Beal comparisons. I think he's going to be better than Bradley Beal. Way more athletic, like you said, than I anticipated. He's got it all for sure.
Yeah, and this summer league, he showed that he pretty much progressed his game in every level. He looked like he didn't need to be there pretty much in like the two games he played summer league in. He also has a like D'Angelo post up game as well. So he's the prototypical perfect shooting guard that you'd want. Okay, so number 4 for me, right?
Yep.
So my number 4 redraft pick would be, here we go, New York, stand up.
Nice.
Staying at number 4, Porzingis. Porzingis, 3-6 Latvia, all that stuff. The white Allen Iverson, because he
unicorn.
Had those... Is that what they call him?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's one of his nicknames, is just unicorn. It's not very creative, but you
I
know.
Mean, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, he's just such a unique guy, once in a lifetime.
Honestly, when I was trying to come up with a player comp for him, I was like, I have no idea who to peg this guy as, you know. So unicorn it is, Porzingis. So yeah, Porzingis, you know.
He's my number 5. I'm just gonna say it right now.
Okay.
So.
Cool. So, yeah, 14 points, 7 rebounds, 2 blocks a game. That was the most impressive part, his ability to, like, just erase shots on the defensive end. Nobody thought this guy would do anything this year, thought he was too raw, too thin. And then he showed, hey, man, I'm super athletic. I have a fierce, like, mentality to me somehow. You know, I got this, like, I don't know, this warrior spirit in me or something like that, the way he'd, like, you know, clean up. If most of his highlights are of him
his
jamming.
His putback dunks, riding up on people's backs. They look absolutely terrified.
It makes
like,
no
like
sense.
Like there's a monster like behind them or something.
But when you look at him, you're like, no, that couldn't have been the monster that just did that to me. But it was, you know.
Jekyll and Hyde, man.
It's crazy. Porzingis is 7'3". I don't even know what his wingspan is, but it's probably 7'4", 7'5".
Yep.
He's just an animal, and he showed... He's almost like a poor man's version of Karl Anthony Towns. You know, his percentages aren't that great. He only shot 42%. But he shot 33% from three-point land, hitting 1.1 a game, which is impressive as a guy who played the center position.
Yeah, man, he took 3.5 threes per game. That's crazy.
That's crazy. He really stretched the floor for them and helped them in the mid-range game as well. And keep this in mind, like, he was playing with Carmelo Anthony, so he didn't really even get the ball that much to do anything. You know, Kristaps Porzingis, his per 36 are 18 points, 9 rebounds, 2.4 blocks. Like, he is just a very unique talent. I guess you could even give the Kevin Garnett comparison to him as well, just because he has the same sort of versatility. And like Towns, there are times where you watch Porzingis on the perimeter. And I remember Chad Ford threw this out there earlier before the draft even started, saying this guy was like Kevin Durant, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. But there are certain plays where, like Karl Towns, Kristaps looks like a wing player out there. which doesn't make any sense because he's 7'3", but yeah, you watch him...
He's so mobile and yeah, agile.
You watch him move, and all of a sudden, you see him blow by people, and then he'll do, like, these weird spinny layup lefty moves, and you're like, well, how did you do that? How did you contort your body in that way? You shouldn't be able to do that. And so Kristaps, like, yeah, in all sense of the word, very unique, versatile player, can play defense, can play offense.
Yeah, he's deceptively strong. I remember, actually, last year I went to Summer League, and I saw him in his first game, and I was so surprised at how physical he was down low on the block, whether it was offensively or defensively. He was bodying guys up, and even though he looked like he weighed half as much as them, he was very, very strong.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the only reason why I'd have concerns with Porzingis, or why I'd even drop him to this number four slot, keep him here, is because I don't think 7'3 players are made to play basketball for very long. So as amazing as he is, and I think him being so athletic actually is a knock on him in terms of longevity, because you've seen it with Yao Ming, you've seen it with like Manute Bol. Like once you pass that 7 foot range, you kind of get into dicey territory in terms of how long can this guy hold up. You know, I think the good thing with Porzingis is he doesn't have a ton of weight on him, so maybe he won't have like the foot issues or the back issues. But the way he plays so hard on the court, and he's so athletic,
he's fearless.
Yeah, you know, I could potentially, I don't want this to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if down the road, you know, he has some sort of foot injury or some sort of knee injury that kind of totally washes his career out. So, but you know,
good thing he's light.
Yeah, good thing he's light. So he might have 6 really, really amazing years like Yao Ming did, and you know, Yao Ming's a Hall of Famer. So who knows? But yeah. That's my only concern with Kristaps. All right, so number 5. Who do you have? Oh, you have Kristaps number 5.
Yes, sir.
So anything else you want to add about Kristaps, I guess?
No, I mean, I think we touched on pretty much all of it. He's a really fun player to watch, for sure. And he's like a instant celebrity. You know what I mean? He definitely has that star power, which no one expected. Just, you know, because he's from Europe and no one knew anything about him. But he's got a sense of humor, had the Allen Iverson braids as a kid.
Yeah, I mean, man,
that stuff is friggin' awesome. So, yeah, hopefully he can avoid injuries. I mean, so far there's nothing that's, you know, he doesn't have any, like, pre-existing conditions or anything like that. So that's definitely a good thing. Big market like New York will see quite a bit of him on national television, even if they don't really deserve it because they're a crappy team. But, yeah, hopefully a lot more stats to come.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so my number 5, and this is where it's going to get wacky, and this is where my personal preference is going to come
in.
And just what I project into the future, I got Super Mario number 5, which I think that was his pick. That was his pick number 5 this year. So I got Mario Hezonja staying at number 5. Okay. And people are going to be wondering why, because he didn't do anything. And I would say, yeah, he didn't do much. He only averaged 17 points a game. 17 points, that's amazing. He only averaged 17 minutes.
Who is this guy? Michael Jordan?
I know. He only averaged 17 minutes a game this year because freaking Scott Skiles would not play the young guys. In those minutes, he averaged...
Coach's name's Scott, man. Byron Scott. Okay. Scott Skiles.
Yeah, Scott Brooks. So he only averaged 6 points, 2 rebounds, 1.4 assists, so not very good numbers. Per 36, though, you know, that averages out actually to 12 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal. But what I like more from Mario Hezonja is just the template of player he is, and I knew this coming into the draft. You know, people were calling him Euro Kobe, and if you watch his highlights, you can see why. This dude is athletic, a Euro as you'll ever find. You know, Euro or not, he's just flat-out athletic. You know, he can dunk the ball with ferocity and with style. He's like 6'8", 6'7". He's like a taller shooting guard, small forward. He can shoot the lights out. So for me, my comp for Mario Hezonja is like a way more athletic version of Danilo Gallinari, pretty much, you know? So I just have so much potential for Mario. I also like his kind of douchebaggy attitude and like cockiness. It's almost the same way. It's kind of Levine-ish, you know what I mean? I remember there was this picture of him as a mailman, and he's delivering this package, and it says fragile ankles or whatever, because apparently, you know, this kid is funny, dude. He's just talking about how many ankles he's going to break in the NBA, you know, like, Hezonja's just got that superstar.
Oh, that's hilarious,
he's got
man.
This superstar mentality packaged into his prototypical shooting guard frame as well. So
it's like wide receivers in football.
Yeah.
Kind of like diva-like.
Exactly.
That's fun.
You know,
gotta have that swagger.
I actually think if Mario Hezonja had been able to have the same minutes as Devin Booker and showcase a little more, that they would have similar stats, and they would have been able, he would have been able to perform up to par as Devin Booker, because he has that talent. And actually, all you need to do is watch Mario Hezonja's highlights, and you'll be like, oh, shoot.
Yeah, how is he's this, got a game for sure.
This guy is exciting as all heck. You know, he's super dynamic. And there's this one play, it might have even been in the regular season, where they're on the fast break, and the ball goes to Mario Hezonja, and Aaron Gordon is trailing him, and Mario bounces the floor at the free line and for as a pass, and Aaron Gordon catches the bounce and then dunks it, and that was an alley-oop play. So that was very exciting. So Mario Hezonja actually has really good playmaking vision as well. It's just a matter of him getting more minutes and opportunities to show that off. So that's why I have Mario Hezonja number five? Yeah, number five.
Yeah.
All right, who's your number?
Number six. I got Miles Turner.
Miles Turner, all right.
Yeah, yeah. So in terms of his shot blocking ability, guy's incredible. He had 2.3 blocks per 36 minutes. That's ridiculous to have that many blocks per game. He's a great help defender. You can see him rotating off of his man anytime, his point guard or whoever gets beat off the dribble. He's right there like a wall. In terms of his offense, that was actually something that really surprised me. He has a really good face-up and a pull-up game. He'll catch the ball from, you know, maybe 12 to 15 feet with his back to the basket, reverse pivot with the left, and then he'll face up, and you think, oh, shoot, this is going to be some ugly, no offense, Julius Randle or Dwight Howard crap, where he's going to run into the lane, but actually he can just pop up from out there. He has a really advanced mid-range game for sure. And in terms of his actual post moves, he has really good footwork. You can tell that he definitely learned how to play basketball when he was in college. There's no doubt about that. And then in terms of his stats, per 36 minutes, he had 16.3 points per game. And he had 8.7 total rebounds per game, about two offensive boards. Like I said, 2.3 blocks.
Sick.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. And in terms of his field goal percentage, for shot about 50% two-pointers, which that could definitely improve.
But given the fact that he was shooting jump shots.
Yeah, and exactly, yeah. It's
pretty good.
Yep, for sure. So, yeah, I had Miles Turner at number six. I think he's on the USA Select team as well, so there's definitely a lot of potential for him there. And he's in a good situation in Indiana, at least. Yeah. You know, they're a playoff bound team. They pile up some wins, so that's definitely a good thing. And in terms of his shooting percentages, a little more specifically, he shot 69%, just right under the rim, so almost 70%. And actually, surprisingly, 3 to 10 feet out, he's about 46%. 10 to 16 feet, he's 40%. So definitely some surprising numbers there, I would say, for a guy that you wouldn't think of him maybe as much when he came into the league as an offensive threat.
Yeah, for sure. The problem with him coming into the league was he had a weird running gait. Mm-hmm. People thought he ran really funky, and he kind of does, but he showed really no concerns of that it would affect him on the NBA level. And actually, Chad Ford had him as one of his highest upside picks. It was just the running thing that kind of scared people off and maybe some health concerns. But yeah, I think Miles Turner, this class is showing what the new NBA of bigs is like, you know, what it's going to be like for the new era of bigs. You have to shoot, you have to block, you have to be able to, you know, pass. And so he kind of fits the form of Karl Towns, Porzingis, et cetera, et cetera. My number six is Jokic, you know, for much of the same reasons you put out there. He's just a very solid, effective rookie. He's boring sometimes. If you're not watching him pass, he's boring and slow as all heck.
Imagine him on the Spurs, man.
God, he would be perfect on the Spurs.
Yeah, we always say stuff like that.
Yeah, seriously. But he is really slow. He's very unathletic, but he makes up for it with a ton of skill. And, you know, my comps for him are actually like a, if you fuse Boris Diaw with, like, Pau Gasol or something. You know, he has more post moves than Boris Diaw, but in the ways that he's able to find people with that vision, and then also,
so flashy.
And then also stretch the floor. For a seven-footer, that's great. I don't know how good he is defensively yet. I think he's pretty solid, but I think that's the next evolution and step he needs to take in terms of being an elite big, if he can be that Karl Towns rim protector. Because he's never going to be super explosive or athletic. But he can definitely be effective. And I throw out Boris Diaw, but also a guy like Brad Miller, who in his prime averaged 15 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 assists. And I was watching some Brad Miller highlights tonight, and I was like, oh yeah, these fools play exactly like each other. Like, he's so slow and so, like, plodding, but it's, like, super effective.
So boring.
So boring, but you get the ball in the basket, and you get teams the shots they need to get. And so, yeah, that's Nikola Jokic, very good guy.
Did Brad Miller have, like, some flair to his game?
He did.
That I just don't remember at
all?
Yeah, if
you watch him in the Kings.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like...
He was throwing, like, behind-the-back passes.
That's true.
Maybe not to the extent that Jokic is doing these weird, like, you know... Ben Simmons
crazy,
type stuff.
Dude. Yeah.
But I mean, I think that's a product of the era. You know, Brad Miller just made very effective passes.
Yeah, it's like the
90s, system.
And he's like an enforcer type as well.
Yeah,
more
for
concerned
sure.
with getting in fights.
Man, shout out to Brad Miller. Damn, we didn't know.
Yeah,
didn't know he was going to get a shout out.
Gotta drop that name.
Anyway, so let's move on to your number. What is it? Number 7 now?
Number 7. All right, Jar Jar Binks, Jahlil Okafor.
Nice.
I was super high on this guy when he was in college. I really like post players, even like that old school NBA type. So naturally, Duke is always on television, and I saw so many of their games, and I really liked him. And but at this point, you could definitely see after his rookie year that he's a bit of a one-trick pony. Offensively, clearly, he's extremely advanced. I mean, the guy says his favorite player is Tim Duncan. So he has great footwork, plays with his back to the basket, gets down really low, clearly has a very sturdy base. He's a thick guy. He's able to face up as well and, again, use his footwork. Totally makes up for a lack of athleticism and quickness. He has enormous hands. So that guy just holds the ball out there like it's a tennis ball. And what that does is it allows him to really deceive the defender because he's just waving it around out there. It does actually remind me a lot because Michael Jordan used to do that too.
Jahlil Okafor, Michael Jordan.
Okay, just in terms of the size of their hands and the way they would hold it,
right,
you know, away from the defender and just like swing through.
Yeah. Or I guess I'm more, you know, Al Jefferson does this a lot when he's posting up. He does the same thing. Able to hold his
Don't get me, I'm not saying that Jahlil Okafor should even be mentioned in the same breath, but in terms of, and when he gets double teamed too, I'm also very impressed with his ability to pass out of double teams because his hands are so freaking big. He can whip the ball around without any issues. He has really good touch for a guy who is rather slow. His spin move is very effective. He has to rebound more at this point. For 36
it's
minutes
terrible.
He only grabs 8.5 rebounds per game.
Kenny.
Per 30. That's terrible, Kenny. Not good at all. So, yeah, I mean, guy knows how to score. That's not in question. But his defense and his rebounding is severely lacking. Made me want to put him lower. But at the same time, he is a guy that is very beneficial on a team. He's going to get you 20 points on any given night. But him being a liability on the defensive end, that could pose huge problems when it comes to late game situations. If he ends up on a competitive team at some point in his life, he might get pulled simply because he can't guard the paint. And same goes for like his free throw shooting. That's another reason why he might get taken out of a game. So at that point, how can you even call yourself possibly your best or second best option on a team? So those are the knocks on him, but we'll have to see what happens. Clearly he had some off the court issues this season as well. I think some of that is losing culture, you know. If you put him in a better scenario, you got to think that some of those things won't occur, but definitely rooting for the guy.
Cool. I'll get to my thoughts on Jahlil when he comes up for me. Number 7 for me, I have Justice Winslow,
nice.
Also known as D.L. Hughley. Last year. When he had his hair like that. Actually, even when he has his braids, because D.L. Hughley had like a braids moment too.
That's good.
But, you know, Justice Winslow is this very, very good, strong, rock-hard player who plays defense.
He's got like a Meta World Peace body.
He totally does.
More,
he totally does.
Much, much more athletic.
Right now, he's just a lot more raw, you know?
Yeah.
He doesn't have the offense right now. You know, if you look at his stats, he in 28 minutes, which is actually a lot, he only had 6.4 points, but he did have 5.2 rebounds.
Yeah, it's like he's got Dwayne Wade, Goran Dragic, you know, all these vets.
No,
so it's cool.
What you really need to look at for Justice Winslow is his tape on the defense. And he is an amazing, for a rookie to be an amazing perimeter lockdown defender already is incredible. And that's exactly what Justice Winslow is. Like, to be honest with you, I would trade probably Julius Randle for him, you know, just to have that lockdown wing defender. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that comes as no surprise to anybody that's listening to this podcast, but, you know, Justice Winslow is that lockdown guy that you need, you know. And for him, you know, I almost compare him to, like, a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist with much higher offensive upside, because he already shows that he can hit a three-point shot. And Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is, like, one of the top perimeter defenders in the league. And Justice Winslow is on that same trajectory, but he already is hitting.
Yeah,
you know, he can. He's proven that he can shoot threes. It's just has to come around a little bit more.
Yeah, he came on late in the season with his 3-point shot.
He did
dramatically. Exactly. So just more time in the gym, he'll get that up.
And so, if he never becomes anything more than a 3-and-D type guy, that's totally fine. You know,
what you need. That's exactly. necessary. I think you and I had a conversation a few months back about every championship team or near championship team has always had that one lockdown 3-and-D guy. Like, there literally wasn't one team we could think of that didn't have that go-to defender.
Yeah. And that's Justice Winslow, you know. But this year, he's going to get a chance to prove himself. No more Dwayne Wade. Who knows if Chris Bosh is going to be healthy. He's going to be like the starting shooting guard, you know. He's going to get a chance to show with usage, can you do something with the ball? I mean, he's shown in transition, he's a very athletic dude. So that's the other thing to his advantage. Yeah. He can dunk over people, jam it on people's faces. Yeah. Because he's so strong, I think there's a makings there of a post-up game as well. So it's just up to him to round out the rest of his offensive game. I remember in Duke, he had this very, like, Euro-steppy, James Harden-esque kind of layup thing and transition going on.
Yeah. I remember watching him again, saw so much Duke.
Yeah.
I didn't really know him until... I mean, I was watching primarily because of Okafor.
Right.
And then I was like, dude, this Winslow guy is a freaking stud. He better come out after 1 year.
Yeah.
After one game of seeing
it's just about him regaining that confidence and, like, getting that three-point shot down, getting that mid-range jump shot down, but... You know, his highest upside is a Jimmy Butler type player, right?
Yeah.
Lowest upside is an MKG, which is totally fine.
Yep, yep.
And the fact that Miami got him at the number 10 pick is, you know, great.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, he'd be my number 7. So nice. Let's move on to number 8.
So he's my number 8.
There we go.
And if you were to actually look at his playoff per 36 minutes, he averaged 10 points per game in the playoffs.
That's pretty good for a rookie, which is crazy.
With a bunch of really good veteran players.
Yeah.
You know, so the fact that they trusted him that much is really incredible. You know, shot about the same 3-point percentage in the playoffs. There wasn't a drop off, so, you know, 28% is not great, but didn't drop off in the regular season. You know, pretty consistent there. 7 rebounds per game, and this guy is a rookie wing.
Yeah,
that's extremely crazy. Impressive. Still had 1 steal per game, only about 1 turnover per game in the playoffs. So the guy's got poise. There's no doubt about that. Just got to get in the gym, put up shots, and that jumper is going to come for sure.
But
so,
the mentality and tenacity is it not in question with Justice Winslow.
I can't help but think of Ron Artest when I watch the guy because their body types are very similar. Defensive stalwart for sure. So that's why he's my number 8.
Cool. My number 8 is Miles Turner. For everything Alan said before, that's why I got Miles Turner there. He's the new age NBA big man. He represents all of that. If you watch his highlights, or just look up Miles Turner blocks LeBron James, he has this disgusting block on LeBron when LeBron is in full flight trying to dunk the ball. And he
I think
totally,
we watched the same video.
He
like
totally
the first
pins it. Yeah, it was like, oh my goodness.
He erased
Miles
his
Turner.
Life with that
yeah.
one.
So Miles Turner, very impressive. It's just, can he continue to round out his offensive game and continue to be a very... almost like a Roy Hibbert in his prime defender and learn positioning well. Because he's already got the block shot stuff down. It's just be a good positional defender. And for me, Miles Turner right now, it's funny because he plays for Indiana, but could he be the second coming of Jermaine O'Neal, you know? Because he's got that wiry frame.
That.
He blocks shots like Jermaine, but he's definitely got that mid-range jump shot. And he could extend it to the three-point land as well. So that's Miles Turner. Who is your number 9?
All right, this one was a little hard to swallow by putting him here, but I'm doing it based on potential. I got Moutier at 9.
I got Moutier at 9 as well.
Okay,
so let's
go.
Why do you have Moutier at 9?
Vision. Can't teach that for sure. He has court vision that would rival D'Angelo's for sure.
Yeah.
He has a maturity to his game because he did play professionally in China for 1 year out of college. Got an NBA body, so we all kind of know the scouting report on him. He's very creative, very crafty as well. So, I mean, those are all things you can't teach. You can't teach natural strength or that court vision. However, like we just said, his offensive game from a shooting standpoint, and his ability to isolate or lack thereof is extremely limited. He shot, 36.4% field goals.
It's really bad.
Yeah, and he's a 67% free throw shooter as a, I guess, like a combo. Yeah. He's a point guard, but he has like combo guard size.
I guess to be fair, his 3-point shot is a lot more advanced or farther along than I thought it would be at this stage. Hitting 1.13s and shooting 32%, so at least he's got that going for him.
Yeah.
But you know, to your point, his offensive polish leaves a lot to be desired because there's not a lot of it.
Right.
Like, he needs to work on his finishing ability. Right now, he breaks people off to pass. But I'm just not sure. People call him, like, you know, his highest upside is a John Wall. But John Wall was a lot more athletic and a lot more polished.
Optimistic.
And the thing with Moutier is he's athletic, but he's not, like, Russell Westbrook or John Wall demonic monster-like athletic. You know,
right.
He's pretty athletic. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely doesn't have that, like, that quickness about him where you're saying he's one of the fastest guys in the NBA. Because that's what guys say about John Wall. You know, Moutier doesn't come close to that.
Yeah.
He's super strong.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. And I would say, like, he's really explosive as well. Maybe that's maybe where the athleticism comes from. But quickness, maybe not so much.
But, you know, like,
6.5 assists per game, though, for 36?
No. His passing and his vision is for real. In comparison, D'Angelo is more of the flashy playmaker. He'll throw you the assist. Moutier will actually get you the assist in terms of he plays perfect pick and roll. Standard, what you'd expect from a traditional point guard, I think. D'Angelo's a little more quirky in the way he does things, right? Moutier is like, this is what,
like,
you'd remember from Baron Davis or like Chris Paul, the types of passes that he'd make. So in that sense, I think Moutier's great. Obviously, once again, it's all coming back down to, can he shore up his jump shot?
Yeah.
Can he get a mid-range jump shot? You know,
it looks weird too.
Yeah, it's kind of
what's unfortunate.
Or
like,
you know, when
he kind of shoots on the way down,
and then his legs kind of flail a little.
Yeah, he bends his knees and brings his heels up about halfway to his calf, like that area when he shoots, and his shoulders aren't really squared. And I don't know, man. He needs a shooting coach.
But I will say, I think he has higher defensive upside than other point guards like D'Angelo Russell because he's stronger. He has the same sort of wingspan and length. And height.
Yeah.
So if he continues to actually shore up his defense, then he could have more potential as a two-way player, which would be great for a point guard of his size.
Yeah, if you were to say, like, you know, who do you want to guard Russell Westbrook on this one possession? Hands down, he's going to have Moutier do it, you know, beyond a lot of players, not just rookies or second-year guys.
Moutier! That's a Max Marcellus joke. But anyways, for higher upside, yeah, maybe he can one day get to... I don't know, his body mold is kind of like Baron Davis-y to me. I don't know.
He's thick.
I wouldn't say Baron Davis, but, you know, Baron Davis, John Wallish at the highest extent. But his lowest extent, which isn't too bad, actually, is Tyreke Evans, you know?
Okay,
A guy who could never get his jump shot going and never really expanded his game. But, you know, he averaged like 17 points, 6 assists, 5 assists.
Yeah, for sure. He's serviceable.
Yeah, so that would be my comp for Moutier. So
nice.
We're on number 10, right?
Yes,
all right,
we are.
Who is your last pick in this top 10, number 10?
So this was tough again. There's like three guys that could have gone here, but I went Willie Cauley-Stein.
All right.
You know, defensively, the guy is a beast. You can't teach length, for sure. He is very athletic. We know that he has some, like, kind of strange health complications and issues. So in terms of the longevity, you know, you got to hope for the best. But I just went with him based on what we've seen so far and not potentially things that could go wrong with him.
Right.
Offensive game, he's super, super raw, but that's not why you want him on your team to score. Anything you get from him offensively is just going to be a cherry on top. But in terms of how he did this last season, his pick and roll defense is incredible. He moves his feet really well. Very, very athletic for a guy who's like 7 feet tall. And in terms of his shot blocking, see, he averaged 1.7 blocks per game for 36 minutes, almost two block shots. As far as his rebounding goes, he had 9 boards per game, which, I mean, he's got DeMarcus Cousins, so I guess it's, you know, it's a bit tough. He also was in a dysfunctional, extremely dysfunctional organization, the Kings, top to bottom. So you got to figure with, I guess with Dave Yeager, things got to get better. There's no...
Well, except they
drafted
the Kings, Papa Giannis and
that's
Scal,
true.
But
that's
we'll
true.
See.
Yeah. 1.2 steals per game for a center, you know?
Yeah.
That's really good. So, yeah, that's why I have him there. Just purely for the defense, I think... I was trying to think of a comp for him.
Well, he's Tyson Chandler or DeAndre Jordan. He may not be the new age type of people who can, like, shoot threes, but he's definitely that guy who all you need him to do is clean up after you, rebound, play defense, and get catch alley-oop lobs. And it's been shown in history that you can win with those types of guys. You know? Tyson Chandler is the most recent example, and obviously you see DeAndre Jordan now. And I think outside, more so than those guys, Willie Cauley-Stein, he hasn't showed it yet, but he has a jump shot, you know?
Yeah.
I think he even improved his free throw percentage if you look at it from his college. I think he was only shooting like 40% in college. Yeah. Maybe 30%.
Now he's up to 65.
Up to 65. He has a legitimate jump shot in terms of his form. Doesn't look broken at all.
Right.
And he's shown that he can, like, at least in practice, like, drain threes and it looks fluid. Obviously, everybody says they can do that, but I believe Willie Cauley-Stein can actually eventually be able to show some form of a mid-range game in the NBA. So we'll see. If anybody cares, he's my number 12 prospect. So, you know, he sucked balls, like all balls, this summer league. Like, he shot like 30% or something from the field. I don't know what was going on. Maybe he's sad because the Kings don't know what they're doing, too. Everybody in the Kings on the Kings seems sad, from DeMarcus to Rudy Gay wanting a trade. So maybe that kind of trickled down to him as well. And he's like, why am I playing with three other centers? You know, so maybe that got into his head a little bit, but his summer league did not look impressive at all. But if we're just going off of last year and the promise he showed, you know, the times that he did get minutes, he was a very athletic, double-double, two-way kind of freak who could run the floor and, catch lobs, all that stuff. So
76% of his two-point made field goals were from assists. So you kind of figure the majority of that's going to be pick and roll or lobs.
For sure. All right, so my number 10 to close this out is Jahlil Okafor. So I have him lower than you do just because, you know, as talented as he is, you know, averaging 17 points, 7 rebounds, and actually shooting like 53%, 54% as a rookie is, you know, incredible. It's really great, especially if you're looking at this in the 2000s, you know.
Yeah.
But you have to remember the Sixers didn't have anybody, and Jahlil got all of that usage. He was the only one who could score. And in today's NBA, you know, he just doesn't give you what you need in terms of, he can't stretch the floor for you. We're going away from a post-heavy, you know, offense. And that's what, when Jahlil's on the floor, you end up eating up 15 seconds of the shot clock, having him post up and then giving it to him and then seeing what he can do with it, you know. That's not the way people want to play anymore because it's too predictable. And you either have to be Shaquille O'Neal level of talent to take advantage of that, or you're just wasting shot clock or something, you know. So, you know, Jahlil Okafor, very talented offensive player, but because he hasn't shown that he can be a great defensive player and he hasn't shown that he could really, you know, you talked about his passing vision. That's more so from Duke, because this last year, he didn't show any of that out of the post. Mm-hmm. He averaged one assist, but like 2.3 turnovers. So most of the time he was turning the ball over. If he can get back to what he was doing in Duke in terms of being able to make the right reads out of the post, making the right passes, then it would be great, you know. But right now, I don't know if he got into his own head this year, all the turmoil off the court, and then also the expectations and not wanting to be in Philly in the first place. But we'll have to see with Jahlil. Hopefully Ben Simmons will help him out, but he's also got a lot of work to do for himself to try and fit into this new age of the NBA, where it's pace and space. You really got to run, man. You got to get some rebounds. There were times when he was like not even in the area to get a rebound this season, which is kind of disheartening because it's like, all right, so what are you now? You're pretty much Brook Lopez, who doesn't get rebounds either, you know? You're very skilled offensively, but the thing with Brook Lopez is at least he can hit a 20-foot jump shot, you know, and also block shots. Brook Lopez is a perennial two-shot block kind of guy. So Jahlil Okafor is not even at that level. But, you know, right now, if he doesn't do anything else to his game, you could see him just having this Al Jefferson, Brook Lopez type of career arc who, you know, it's effective, but you definitely have to be on the right team to make that work. You know, have like shooters all around him, and then you see Al Jefferson now. You know, he's coming off the bench. You know, you see Enes Kanter. He's coming off the bench. You know, they're good scoring bigs, but if you can't play both ends of the floor, it's going to be tough. So
it's true.
So that's our top 10. But where do we have Larry Nance Jr., Alan? So where do you have Larry Nance Jr. falling within your the rest of your draft? If you had to redraft him, obviously he was number 27. And when Larry Nance got drafted, all of us were like, who? What? I'm pretty sure ESPN was the same way. Because if you remember the highlight reels they showed him shooting jump shots and doing weird stuff. I feel like they weren't ready for when his name came up. So they were like, Because if you watch his YouTube highlights, he has some incredible dunks and highlights from college. For sure. But it feels like ESPN didn't even expect him to get picked.
Yeah, the ESPN guys in the trailer were not ready to keep
those
highlights.
They were just like, oh, shoot, jump shot.
First thing, oh, he's dribbling around cones by himself. That's cool.
Jump shot, layup. But yeah, Larry Nance, obviously everybody knows he's now a very invaluable part of our young core. So where do you have Larry Nance falling?
Got him about 14th.
14th, yeah, nice. Yeah. I have him at 13th.
Nice.
So if I could go from 10, it's Okafor. 11 is Stanley Johnson. Nice. 12, got Willie Cauley-Stein. Okay. And then 13 is Larry Nance. So Larry Nance actually, out of all our rookies, has the highest win shares, which isn't saying much because we had a terrible offensive system and we sucked.
We won games last
year? Yeah, I know, right? So, but Larry Nance has 2.2 win shares. Jordan Clarkson is second with 2.1. Which, you know, obviously Larry Nance, we already know, does all the right things. And when he's on the court, makes a positive impact, whether that's offensively or defensively. Why do you have such a high jump from 27 to 14 for Larry Nance?
I mean, look at the guys who got drafted above him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you see Tyus Jones, number 24. He's a small point guard, you know, who played 1 year at Duke. I mean, he was really good for them. But, yeah, you got Jarrell Martin, 25. I mean, Ronnie Hollis Jefferson has some potential. Bobby Portis definitely showed flashes in Chicago. Justin Anderson's a good body. So, I mean, it's not like the guys above him were garbage. Sam Decker is hurt pretty much all year long, but he looks like he could be a pretty good two guard. But there's some other ones with big names like Kelly Oubre Jr. I mean, who knows what that guy's going to end up being. So, yeah, that's why I had him definitely as a top 15 pick. I guess the one knock on him, he's older, so you're a little worried, like, oh, is he already what he's going to be? But he's such an intelligent player. I feel like he still has quite a bit of room to grow, and he is so intelligent that he's going to find ways to make himself even more valuable than he already is. So, yeah, I bump him up a solid 10 to 13 spots from where he was at 27.
Yeah, for me as well. I think he's a lotto pick, like maybe at the end of it, number 13. But for sure, if you ask any NBA GM to redraft this class and say, who do you think is going to help you the earliest and the soonest? It's going to be Larry Nance.
Oh,
you know,
can you imagine like him on a playoff team right now?
Yeah.
Be incredibly valuable.
He just play defense, do the right thing, screen, catch alley-oops, you know, make the right reads. That's Larry Nance for you, already showing that. And the other thing is, like, it's not like he's not without upside at all because his athleticism is off the charts.
Yep.
And
yep.
You've seen the jump he's made from just last year to Summer League.
To Summer League, yeah, he can shoot.
So it's not even capped as much. Yeah. We just cap him off because we say, oh, he's 23 already.
Sure.
It's done.
Right.
But you look at Draymond Green, and, yeah, he was really old, too, when he came out of college. But he is worth every single penny of, you know, what Golden State has given him, which is a max contract already. So it's crazy. And
worth every inappropriate Snapchat as well.
I don't know about that. But, but yeah, you know, with all that being said, you know, Larry Nance for sure. One of the most biggest steals of the draft, I think, in 2015. So props to Mitch again.
Dude, Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance. Can't wait for next year. Second round draft pick.
Yeah.
Like, for real. Like,
yeah.
I'm not even being sarcastic. No. It's exciting when you have confidence in your organization that they can pull a rabbit out of the hat, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure. Anthony Brown just got to catch up a little. You know what I'm saying?
Catch
up a little. You know, but with that said, that'll wrap up our 2015 NBA redraft. Kind of went a little longer than I expected, but, you know, that's fine. We have fun doing these, and we got a lot of talk to talk about. Catch us on the next episode, and hopefully we're doing a good job, you know, making summer at least a little less boring for you guys with some Lakers talk and NBA talk.
Get some Olympics going on this
Olympics
week.
Olympics is
first
tonight.
Game tomorrow.
Instead of watching the opening ceremonies, we're doing this. So, I mean, honestly, guys, please rate and review us on iTunes because, like I said, the more you rate and review us, that's how many board game nights the guys are going to be having to build that chemistry. Coach Luke, what board game would you play if you had to play a game?
I'm a pretty family-oriented guy. You know, my dad, Bill, he's kind of on the wild side. So, you know, we played a lot of Mousetrap, actually. I don't know if you guys remember that game, but you like build all these crazy contraptions. That's kind of how the song went. And, you know, he actually used some real cheese in there, which was pretty funny. If it were up to him, he'd probably get some rats too. But yeah, I like Mousetrap's a fun one.
All right. Thank you, Coach Luke, for giving us your insights on your game board past and history with your family. That's great, man. And hopefully you can, you know, introduce Mousetrap to the guys. All right.
Without the mouses and without the cheese, though, because we don't want any of that stuff.
Exactly. Parallel it to basketball in some sort of way. Yeah, so with that said, also follow us on Twitter, obviously, at Lakers Legacy Pod. That's how we want to interact with fans in the future, so please, if you're listening, follow us on Twitter. Also, we have a Gmail account if you want to throw out any questions or topic suggestions that you want us to talk about in the future. The people who have sent in stuff, don't worry, we're still keeping that for a future episode. We just don't have enough right now.
Yeah, seriously, guys, a shout out, like, the suggestions you guys have sent in are really good.
Yeah, so
like, it got me hyped up and super excited to, you know, do some research and things like that. So for sure, keep them coming.
Yeah, and if you've sent those in, don't worry. We're just saving them right now. We just don't have enough. But our email account is thelakerslegacypod@gmail.com. So yeah, with that said, thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you next time. Watch the Olympics for now. Watch Team USA ball out. Watch Marcelo Huertas with Brazil ball out. And watch Jose Calderon do his Jose Calderon stuff with Spain. Alan, I'll catch you later, dude.
All right, man. See ya. Pushing and pulling and wishing that Messiah would be coming soon with his deliverance. Napa Know How. Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. GEICO's been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with GEICO, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. More power to you. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.